Ready when you are.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome. Welcome.
Let's just get it closer to you. Yeah.
I don't lean in very well.
Okay. Can we get it
welcome.
Hello.
Oh, you
here
go. Hello. Welcome, everyone, to the February 20th, 2019 meeting of the Cambria Community Healthcare District. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready to begin.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a quorum today, and in fact, we have a quorum plus one. I'd like to introduce to you, or have Lori introduce to you, Ozma, the sixth board member. Ozma is... Ozma. How do you do it?
Hello.
Hello.
Just speak louder.
So, hi, everybody. This is my new guide dog, Ozma, which means divine protector. She and I just returned, we graduated Saturday from Guide Dogs for the Blind after a 14-day, what I like to call, extreme guide dog boot camp, because we got to practice all of our new skills together in the middle of downpours, in the middle of busy San Francisco streets, and we even took a nice hop, nice long hike through a big muddy trail. So she's practically perfect in every way, and I'm so happy to introduce her to you guys.
I wouldn't brought my cat.
Yeah.
Testing. 1, 2, 3?
Yeah, fine.
Okay. I'm just such a gentle soul. It's always hard with my mic, it seems. Next, we have a public comment for items not on the agenda. Is there anyone who would like to speak? Public comment for anyone, for any item not on the agenda?
Okay. We're having a little trouble hearing you. Sorry.
I'm going to start to talk loudly.
Good afternoon, President Rawson Gray and members of the Healthcare District Board of Directors. My name is Bob Kelly, and I'm just a community volunteer who's lived here about 20 years. With me today is one of our Board of Director members, Dr. Brad Lumpkin, who has about 40 years of clinical psychology experience, the last 16 with the California prison system. We have a new group. It's called the Cambria Opioid Project, and it's made up of local doctors, pharmacists, and caregivers. Our mission is to provide opioid overdose prevention and instruction. We are all volunteers, and we are supported by Cambrian donations. We would like to be able to have a distribution site in Cambria to give out the overdose kits to spouses, caregivers, and friends. There is a need here, because I'll talk for a minute about them. I gave you a written sheet about them, so I'll talk about that in a minute. There is a group in San Luis Obispo that meets today at 1 o'clock. That's why they can't be here. They're called the Bangers, and they provide the distribution kits. 2 weeks ago, on Wednesday, they gave out over 402 hours. 20% of those were people from Cambria. This opioid problem is not just for the, it's not the homeless, it's not veterans, it's us. people like us. There's 20 different opioid types of painkillers, and we estimate here, because we have a pharmacist as part of our directors, that we have about 500 people here that are taking some kind of opioid medicine. And so what we are having a problem with is trying to find a sponsor. And we are just volunteers. We all have some kind of a medical background and are very interested in this subject. And so we're kind of really here today asking you if you would sponsor us. We would could be a commission under you or a committee. We aren't even able to open a checking account because we don't have a 501c3. We were turned down by the Johnson Center to provide distribution there because we, again, don't have a 501c3. So we're really kind of here today to ask you to sponsor us. We're not asking you to sponsor us financially because I think the funds, and I know this town pretty well because I've done projects like this, so the funds will come from our town. We have over $1,000 already in the first week. But by being sponsored by you, we can apply for grants. Our volunteers can be protected, even though we are protected by the California Good Samaritan Act. Still under your wing, we would be protected. We would put on educational workshops for you. We'd conduct surveys. And anything that the board of directors would like us to do, essentially be getting 5 to 7 volunteer employees.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kelly. We have a 3-minute rule for every member who speaks before the public, and we are sorry to have to interrupt you.
Okay, that's really all I had. I was going to ask you to just take a minute and read this. It was handed out to you, I hope. I turned in a packet to all of you 10 days ago. Obviously, it didn't get there. I wanted to get on the agenda. And this is from the Bangers.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Please read it.
Thank you. We appreciate your coming.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Bob, what prevents your group from applying for and obtaining 501c3 status?
Oh, we can. It just takes money and time. And we
it's not very much money. If you've already collected $1,000, you've got enough money to apply.
Yeah. No, we have a man here in town that can do it for us. We did it for the pickleball courts, so we can do it. No, I think everyone has said to us all along that we really belong to be, we belong under you. It's where we belong and the other groups in town. And again, you could appoint a commission like CCSD has done with the PROS Commission. You pick the people that you want yourselves that you feel will work on the subjects you want, or you could just kind of adopt us as a committee.
May I ask a question? May I ask why you're not, can you hear me, interfacing with the county opioid safety project that they have ongoing with countywide, which is very similar to what you're proposing, but they utilize local pharmacies or drugstores for distribution. So I'm wondering why we're not participating with the county and letting them have oversight.
The county has a volunteer group called the Bangers, which is the sheet that I gave you. You need to read that. That will explain who is providing the service in the county. Yes, the pharmacist can give out Naloxone. They can offer it to the person. The person doesn't have to take it. But we know that that can be done. Now, that's actually happened within the last month only. So, but if you read about the Bangers, you'll see we have partnership with them. They are the experts at this. They have the backing of the doctors, and they have the grant. And so we are working with the county. And I will attend their seminar on the 28th, which we have once a month.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to speak at this time?
Can I add something to what Bob said?
If you wish to speak, we ask that you go to the podium, present your name and for the record, and allow us to hear you with the assistance of a microphone.
I'm sorry, I can hardly hear you.
I'm sorry, it's my own fault. The reason we ask you to go up to the podium is so we can have your name for the record and so that everyone can hear you.
That's fine. Thank you. And tell me, please, over the years and times my students have told me my voice kind of goes down as I speak. So if it starts to go down, you know, I mean, they speak up, please. Just briefly, I just wanted to kind of mention, Bob asked me to come into this because of my background a little bit. My name is Brad Lumpkin. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and have been practicing for quite a few years, both in academia but mostly in practice. The problem, there's two separate issues here, not problem, but two separate issues are one of the I'll call survivor kids, if you will, the rescue kids that Bob is in the process of his program getting out to the people. And MD does not need to be involved in that, which leads me to one other thing. I'm a real convention. I'm a PhD, I'm an MD. I cannot prescribe. I know quite a bit about medications, but I do not at all want to suggest that I'm giving expert opinion on medication because that's left in the area of the MDs. There is medication out and has been out for quite some time called Suboxone. It is basically a wonder drug that can be prescribed by doctors that have a little bit of training. And it's something that really would piggyback onto these kits, but get the people and get a prescription for this, and the doctors can prescribe it with 8 hours of training. And I've followed up with a couple of doctors to see if they would be willing to touch the Cambria area. My understanding is there's quite a need here. And it's, you know, we see the things in the news all the time about the overdose and stuff. And the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, the drugs and out there and the homeless and all this kind of thing. Actually, the great increases are in the elderly population, and they're usually tied in with medical issues. And go to your doctor if you have a sore arm or a broken arm or something. The first thing they'll prescribe to you is OxyContin or something like that, which is a fine drug, used correctly, but it's very, very addictive. And that's where the addiction problem, in my opinion, comes from mainly, and there's a whole group of people here in Cambria that could probably benefit from that. So that's what the other half of this is we're looking at, and I'm still working with Bob on looking at who to get in here, who can do it, who wants to do it, prescribe, set up here, and
thank you. Anyone else would like to address the board? Thank you. The consent agenda is different than it's been in the past because it turns out that a consent agenda only needs to have things that need to be voted on and then approved and moved on. So the only item on our consent agenda is the minutes from the January 16th meeting, 2019 meeting, and the revision of the December 12th, 2018 meeting. Are there any comments or corrections on those minutes? I actually, on page 5, I note that I, at the meeting, request...
Which minutes?
The minutes of the January meeting, on page 5 of the packet. It's a small thing. I noticed that I had asked that we have a dual... that we look at the dual call page and revise it to give us different information. And looking at that, rather than... there wasn't time to do that in the last month, but what I would like to do with the board's approval is create an ad hoc committee that would involve Maureen and whoever from the staff she sees fit to appoint, and Iggy Fedoroff to work with us on creating some answers, some better reports, some things that reflect metrics that we really believe we need to follow, and to diminish workload on things that either we don't understand or are not critical to us. So with the board's blessing, I will proceed and do that.
So you don't need any change to 6A?
No, I simply use 6A as a way to explain the desire I have to kind of do it in a more holistic way.
Is there any action by the board that needs to be made to create this ad hoc committee?
The board, the president has the right to appoint any committee, but it's my opinion that if the board doesn't like the idea, it's not going to go anywhere anyway. So if you just nod yes, that would be enough for me to know that I'm doing something that's okay with you.
President Gray, did you put someone else besides Director Fedoroff on there? I did not hear that.
I suggested Iggy Fedoroff. I don't know if he's willing to do it.
Just one board member. That's what I was wondering.
Yes, that's all that's allowed.
Okay, thank you.
And I agree to participate.
So I just need a motion to approve the minutes and the revision of the minutes of this January 16th meeting and the revision of the December 12th meeting.
I move to approve the revision to the January minutes and approve the revisions to the December minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Belatedly, I'll second that motion.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
You don't know Rosenberg's rules as well.
I do profess to. The administrator's report, Maureen.
Well, thank you. As you know, I started January 17th, so just about a month ago. And my very first thing that I need to do is thank the three acting administrators that were in place before I came. Heidi Holmes-Nady was her kind of administrator, as was Jason Melendi. And then you, President Watson Gray, took over also as administrator for a period of time. And the reason I'm thanking all of you is because of your efforts. I really walked into a place that had managed to keep going, minus one whole body, which, when you don't have very many bodies, that's quite a big position down. So I wanted to publicly thank everyone. I also wanted to give special thanks to Heidi, and now that he's in the audience, Jeremy, for setting up my desk and my computer and doing all the things that make it easy for me to feel comfortable and welcome, as well as the rest of the staff. And there's four sitting in the audience. Everybody's making me feel very welcome and at home, as well as the rest that aren't here today. So I just needed to say that. It's made the first month a lot easier, as has the board. It's been a busy month, and they've been more than accepting of my not knowing answers and stumbling along. So thank you. During the past month, I have managed to meet all the full-time staff and talk with them, as well as several of the part-time staff. I had one meeting with CCSD, and met with the county's EMS director, talked with several of our business partners on the phone, and have participated in doing several things in the office, one of which Director Hernandez and I walked through and talked with our tenant, CHC, looked at space. So it's been a busy month. We've also had staff support to the Property and Facilities Committee, the Finance Committee, as well as the Executive Committee. And I think we've really started to move some of the agenda forward. And so I'm excited. And thank you all for giving me the opportunity of being here.
Thank you for being here.
Yes. I do want to thank Maureen for stepping in and doing such a great job this first month, picking up a lot of pieces that were in need of care, and her. It's just great to have you aboard.
Thank you.
We now have the reports of the committees.
Excuse me, where would we be doing the financial review of the month?
It comes right after. We have the finance report under 4B. And then we go on to, and we also have the budget review itself. So if you want to give a committee report under 4B, you may. And then you have the next two main agenda items.
What I think he was asking, since I'm new, Heidi and I were going to interchange questions for. Did you want to give your report?
I will just say that to date, for this month, we've got $34,500 in ambulance income. We have had 49 calls, 30 were transports, one was a Monterey call, and the rest were canceled, dry runs, or standbys. So that's where we stand as of today, February 20. If you have any other questions regarding the financials before the finance report, you can certainly write down to me for you.
There's a couple of items that went through. We're looking at January's financials at this point. A couple of items that the board needs to be aware of. The first has to do with insurance, and that's both workers' comp and liability insurance. These insurance policies renew in July of each year, and the total cost is in the neighborhood of $100,000. And historically, in prior years, we have made the lump sum payments in the month of July. Okay? And it was a big negative drain on our cash reserves at a time when we're into a slow period of cash receipts in terms of tax revenues, et cetera. Last fiscal year, the board recommended to the administrator to see if he could sit down with the insurance carrier and could we spread the payments out, as opposed to a large lump sum, spread them out throughout the year and help us with the cash flow issue. He was able to do that. What he didn't say when he was directed and achieved the fact of spreading the payments out is that the insurance company added, on top of the premiums, an insurance component, an interest component, for delay in payment. So we were paying actually more money in the long run for insurance with the addition of the interest component. December was a very good month, like it normally is, in terms of cash receipts, because everybody pays their property taxes, and there's a large influx of cash into the district. In January, staff came to me as chairman of the finance committee and said, we have a number of months remaining on the payment of the insurance policies, and we can avoid a couple of $1,000s of interest if we pay the remaining amount. I looked at the issue, and I concurred with that. So when you look at January, and you look at both the workers' comp and the insurance line, you'll see for the first 6 months some rather even payments, and then a lump sum in the month of January, which was the remaining portion of the payments. So we will not have any charges for the last 5 months of the year. Second item I wanted to talk about was on the equipment payment line, actually the medical supply line, there's a negative amount in the expense line, negative amount of $6,458. This has to do with a timing issue. Back in the month of November, we purchased a Stryker gurney, and simultaneously we made a request to Project Heartbeat for the reimbursement of that. That item was a little over $8,000, as I remember. We acquired it in November, so in November, when you look at that line item, you see a big spike. It went up over $10,000. Well, in January, we finally received the payment from Project Heartbeat. And when you receive it in January, you record it in January. So when you record that nice payment, it creates a negative amount in the expense line. The other thing about January is January was a very good month in terms of ambulance runs. and we had 55 transports in the month of January. That is way above the average that we've been having for the previous 12 months. We transported 56 patients. We had 17 dry runs. And the number of billings for revenue had spiked up to 73. To put that in perspective, the average for the previous 18 months in terms of billings was 51. So we had a very good month in terms of ambulance activity and billings. Unfortunately, the way our accounting system works, we see little or no, none of that revenue in the month of January. We don't record it until we're actually receiving the revenue. And so it's going to be over the next several months before we see the benefit of that. But that's good news. And that's all the comments I have.
Any questions?
Thank you.
I did want to say, I thought we were talking about this later, so I will say a couple of things. One of the reasons that our income was lower for January is noted on the addendum that I sent out, because the deductibles reset. So for those people who have excellent insurance but have a $1,000-$4,000 deductible, if they have an ambulance ride, they are going to get the full bill, and chances of them paying us that full amount aren't as good as if they got an ambulance ride after their deductible is met. So historically, January for most doctor's offices, ambulances, is sort of a low amount month. I did want to say that our insurance is actually about $76,000 a year, both the work comp and the other insurance. We did pay a certain amount of interest, and that is included in those last 2 months, as Director Art said. I did also want to let you know, there was a question about if we were paying on the new credit to vehicle mileage rate, and we are. It increased to 0.58 from 0.505. So we've been paying that since January 1st.
Thank you very much. Lori, do you have a report you'd like to offer from the Healthcare Advocacy Committee?
We didn't meet in February, but we will be meeting next week to discuss with a subcommittee how to go about putting together either or both a fall prevention workshop or fall prevention program to be sponsored by the healthcare district, and then we will be meeting March 13th as a group. So I'll have more to tell you next month.
Thank you. Iggy, I know you have agenda items to come, but is there anything specific to the Property and Facilities Committee you'd like to report separately?
Well, you called me before the meeting, mentioned that former Director Jim Barringer was wanting once again to urge us to place a bike rack in front of our facility somewhere. And so before this meeting, I went out and measured the bike rack that's across from the former Dragon Bistro. And basically, it's just under 10 feet long. And I don't know what the length of a bike is, but let's say it's 4 feet. So basically, you need a 4x10 footprint. And there is such a footprint available that doesn't interfere with the parking lot and what I'm going to talk about later about what we discussed at the Property and Facilities Committee meeting. It can be placed either on the east side or the west side of the CHC sign. And it wouldn't block people being able to see the sign, because you can look right through the bike rack, you can look right through the bikes. So if anybody has any objection to me doing such a thing, I'll just get a hold of Jim and tell him, as far as I'm concerned, you could do that. Now, one thing that it'll kind of interfere with is if we want to hire someone for lawn care and they want to get in there and you know, take care of the yard, and there are a bunch of bicycles that are, that would interfere with it.
My sense is it would be good to get a summary of the whole bike program, what, if any, insurance coverage is associated with the placement of the bikes, if we might, because we in some way have them on our property, would we be, is there something that relieves us of any potential liability? You know, I'd just like to, I think it'd be good to ask for a total program overview, so if we do decide to sponsor it, we know what we're a part of. I don't mean to be overly careful about it, but I think this board should get to see what others have looked at.
The program has been described to the North Coast Advisory Council, and the Traffic Committee, I think, are the ones that ended up interposing no objection to the placement as long as property owners agreed. I suppose it's worth Maureen asking SDRMA if there's any impact. I just gut feel is there wouldn't be any because we're not responsible for any cars, we're not responsible for any bicycles. You know, if you wanted to make sure of that, you could just put up a sign that says not responsible for lost or stolen bicycles placed in this bike rack. And that's that ought to do it. But I don't think we need a legal opinion or anything like that.
Well, at the very least, I think it would be something we'd put on the agenda for next month to vote on. And I think ex-Director Berenger would be happy with that. And in the meantime, we can work to find out whatever we should know about what it means to have said bikes on our property.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be a future agenda item. Who will invite Jim? You want to do that since he called you?
We will make sure he is invited.
All right.
Moving now to regular business. Is there any public comment for item 5, regular business? Okay, so the first item is 5A, and it involves budget review and consideration of the 2018-2019 budget, looking at suggested changes and updates.
And I would recommend that we talk about the Property and Facilities Committee report first, and I recommend that 5A become 5C, and 5C become 5A.
Is there any objection to so doing?
No.
No.
Okay.
Okay. So.
So we're moving to 5A, just to be clear.
Well, I mean 5C. Type C. But it's now
5A.
And in the minutes, probably will be reflected as 5A. Let me get to the agenda here. I'm smarter than myself. Okay. So, the Property and Facilities Committee met. It was a publicly noticed meeting, and participants included Director Gray and Administrator Robles-Wilson. So, we also had a member of the public who has been invited to join the committee and was there, and that's Mel McCullough. He is president of the Cambria Chamber of Commerce. So, the first thing we discussed was the hillside that had a slip back in January of 2017. And basically, the only thing that's been done since then is that the debris was cleared through, I think, efforts of the staff, the operational staff, and a hauling company. I don't know who was hired, but anyway, the debris was hauled away, and I think it's 4 K-rails, the kind that we find separating us from highway construction, were put in place. Since then, to my knowledge, all the district has done is spend money on studies by geologists to determine what would give us an absolute guarantee of safety for our buildings. However, as a new director, when I went and looked at the site, I didn't find that the hillside slipped, as the staff knows, behind the former crew quarters. It slipped, in fact, between that building and more behind the building that is, I think, designated as 2511/2515. Well, that troubled me right off the bat. I guess I should have looked at it earlier and made comments in earlier meetings. Because there, it is clear that we comply with the code that was talked about in the various geology surveys. You need to be, I think it was 15 feet away from a slope like we had. And we are 15 feet away. And I don't think 15 feet was ever threatened. The only thing that ended up being threatened was one of the ambulances, and then CAL FIRE came in and helped our crews free the ambulance that is normally parked behind the building in that area. Okay, so what we need after all these geology reports is we need a report from our insurance company that either says, okay, we'll pay for the hillside to be remediated, or we have a geology report from our own geologist who has visited the site who says, you don't really have a problem. One way or the other. They can't have it both ways. They can't both say, we're not going to help you remediate the hillside, and it is a threat, and also then turn around and tell us, we're not going to pay you. And I'm not sure that all came out coherently because Director Rice's phone was pissing me off. I can't whistle and chew gum at the same time.
If I can just give you a moment of date, you know, I have reached out to our insurance company 2 weeks ago and spoke with our representative who then said he sent an email out, excuse me, to the geologist who had come out to our site. I left him another voicemail this morning because I haven't heard from him in 2 weeks, and he said he would get back to me as soon as he heard back from the geologist. So I'm trying to keep in contact with the insurance company so that we can get their report.
Okay. So, I mean, my position as chair of the Property and Facilities Committee is either the hillside is safe and we then need to proceed to remediate other problems with the facility and with, say, the trees, which is, I think, the next item. Or it's not safe, and they need to pay us what they think it takes to remediate the danger to the building. Incidentally, I did check with the county, and as near as I can tell, both our buildings are properly permitted from the 1970s through to, I think the latest permit was pulled in 2007. Pretty sure that's the case. And they refer to the crew quarters modification at that point as Suite C garage. And so it's a bit confusing, but I think the building that has on it the numbers 2535 is considered by the county to be part of Suite C. And of course, the southernmost or easternmost part of the other building is also Suite C. Okay. So with the board's concurrence, I think we need to have the administrator continue her efforts to get the geologist report, because it's a sort of a cascading effect. You know, if the decision is one, then we go a certain path. If the decision is two, then we go a different path. All right. Any questions so far?
Are you moving on to B?
Yes.
Would you like us to consider A first so we don't have to go back to it?
Okay.
Is there someone who would like to make a motion?
I would like to make a motion to have staff continue working with the insurance company and the geologist to resolve the issue of are they going to reimburse us to correct whatever needs to be corrected, if anything, on the slope, and if not, we have a report from the geologist.
That gives us a clean...
A clean bill of health.
Clean bill of health, right.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
We're not sure who's second.
Miguel.
Lord, Miguel. One of those. Pick one.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Okay, so now you're moving on to B.
Right. So the next item, I said it was going to be a slope, but it's not. It's the parking lot. And the parking lot is looking like a... Well, let's put it this way. I just returned from Vietnam. Their parking lots are better. And so I think we should do something about that. And we would like to, while we're doing it, we would like to increase the number of handicapped parking spots, because Mel McCullough mentioned during a meeting that sometimes the three parking spots that are available are all taken, and it would be helpful to have another one or two. And so I would get a bid for two, just to be perfectly safe. So I would like the board to authorize the administrator to obtain multiple bids from licensed, bonded, reputable paving contractors in accordance with district bylaws to resurface, restripe, and add two handicapped parking spaces to the parking lot west of the building designated as 2515 Main Street, parentheses CHC and CHD administrative offices. And the bids should be valid for 120 days while we're trying to decide what to do, and then be presented to the Property and Facilities Committee at the next meeting. The next meeting has not been established as of this time, and I think what we would do is wait for bids to come in on these various subjects, the geologist report to come in, and once it's all in, then we have a reason to meet, and we then can meet and have an output that would be presented to the entire board for decision making.
Do you anticipate having striping done for a future bike rack as well?
Where I propose to put the bike rack is not a parking lot. It's a grassy area either side of the CHC sign that is between our building and the roadway.
So you would leave it grass, you would not pave it?
Yeah, just leave it grass. I mean, if anyone thinks that ought to be paved, I don't know.
If you could always get an estimate based on both and maybe their judgment as well about what would work.
We could always look at another idea is to convert the area that's either side of that sign to a high-quality artificial turf. It's not much involved. So
we'll look at options.
Does the board have any questions or discussion for Iggy on item B?
No.
Staff, any questions?
So I would entertain a motion to direct the administrator to obtain such bids.
I so move.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 5-0. Iggy number C. Alphabet number C.
This was just basically a comment that doesn't, I don't think, require any board action, but maybe it does. Appoint President Gray to work with the CCSD to revise the CCHD portion of the local hazard mitigation plan. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, the reason I thought it would be proper to not just assume that I would be the one to represent the board, and so I did work on the local hazard mitigation plan a year and a half ago, and I would be able to bring to that committee meeting both the administrator and the chair of the Property and Facilities Committee if they so wish, so we'd really be sort of a team. The point is to be able to represent the district's needs by accurately stating or updating the plan for any kinds of risks or issues we face, so that should we need to apply for a FEMA grant, we have updated the plan as they request, and we've well stated what our issues are. I just didn't want to appoint myself.
I move that President Gray be so appointed.
Second.
Any discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, 5-0. Now we're on to D.
So this one is for tree evaluation, pruning, and removal. We've already had one contractor come out and take a look and give us sort of a bid that's being retained in a confidential manner. So we need to comply with our bylaws and obtain a competition for removing danger that the crew has brought to my attention, and I'm sure brought to others' attention, with regards to the trees on the hillside behind the property. Now, some say because the cypress trees, when they're next to each other, have interlocking root systems, that there is little or no danger of such trees falling. However, I would prefer to not have, as was anecdotally relayed to me, 30 years ago, Jeremy's mother said, well, what they would do on stormy, windy nights was they would repair to a local hotel, let the storm pass, and then when the storm was over, they'd come back in. Why do that? I mean, I don't see any purpose. And we already have approval from Ralph Koble to remove his trees. We have to have a letter that, I guess, certifies that fact for satisfaction of the county. We have to get a county arborist out to take a look at what we would intend to do. And then there's the matter of the tree that is to the south slash east of our property that really doesn't have any overhanging limbs, but we may want to ask that property owner if we could trim those limbs as well. I think that was part of the idea. So I would simply and by the way, for administrator's reference, I'd be happy to draw up a statement of work if you're not comfortable doing that. And I'll work up a statement of work and basically give you an RFP by email that you can then send out for both the paving and the other, since I'm fairly well versed in that kind of malarkey over my 30 years in contracting. So I'll take that on as my responsibility, but we would ask the board to approve the administrator requesting bids as I've outlined here. And an important point is that these bids are to be provided by licensed, bonded tree specialists who carry all necessary insurance, including but not limited to workers' compensation. And why do I make a point of that? because if any of you have watched trees being taken down, you'll understand that all you need is for one worker to slip and fall, and you want the contractor that does it to be fully insured. Okay, so I would entertain a motion.
First, any questions?
Oh, sorry, any questions?
Any questions at all from anybody?
No. Is there any public comment with regard to that? Okay. So, I entertain a motion. That end of the table needs to move.
Your turn.
Go ahead.
I move that we ask the administrator to go forward getting appropriate bids for tree removal and report back next meeting.
Yeah, to the Property and Facilities Committee.
To the Property and Facilities Committee.
I second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? 5-0. Now we're on to E.
Okay, and then finally, Director Gray brought this up in our Property and Facilities Committee, and I agree that it ought to be accomplished, that Suite B needs to be evaluated. Now, the administrator mentioned in her report that she and Director Hernandez walked through the CHC facility, but we're talking here about a very much more critical look to see when they vacate, what equipment and supplies are left behind, in all likelihood. Less supplies, more equipment. You know, is there oxygen in the walls? Whatever, things of that nature. So what's there and what needs to be there? Another example is in your walkthrough, I understand that CHC complained about the heating system.
Yes, they did.
Okay. So that's the kind of thing that we would need to then work up a statement of work, or maybe have a building inspector come through and say, yeah, here's what you need to do. So we might hire a building inspector, and we might say, in order to attract another tenant, say urgent care, for example, what do we need to have there for them? So it's kind of a two-pronged thing. And I agree that that ought to be done. I don't know. We didn't really discuss a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But I presume that that tenant is going to move out.
We actually have access written into the lease to do just
that. Oh, so we could actually do it regardless.
That's correct. It depends on your time.
Well, March or April is okay with me.
You know, whoever makes the motion could consider a phrase as simple as practicable, and then it will fit into the puzzle of communication.
Okay. All right. So we would entertain a motion to, I guess, direct the Property and Facilities Committee, so it shouldn't be one of us to make a motion, but direct the Property and Facilities Committee to investigate the current CHC facility to determine what needs to be done to that facility, and then maybe go out. Well, actually, we would come back to the board and report back what we believe needs to be done and why. Now, in the process of that, we probably need to get a building inspection. Now, I have an informal quotation from a building inspection firm, and basically it's less than $1,000 to inspect both 2535, which is the old crew quarters, and 2511, the professional, 2511/2515, the professional building. So together, the two would be under $1,000. So I think in this motion, the administrator needs to be authorized to obtain a building inspection as part of the process.
Any questions about the need for a building inspection or any other aspect of the motion? Would someone like
to move?
I would like to make a motion to perform the work under item E as described and outlined by Director Federball.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 5-0. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, and I took the liberty, since I'm both on the Finance Committee and the Property and Facilities Committee, that when I met with the Finance Committee, I input my guesstimates as to what this work might cost. And so when Director Rice goes through the budget that he's going to go through, he will identify those amounts of money that I need.
And just for the record, the amount of money that you guesstimated that we included was how much?
Let's see. It was $10,000 for the parking lot. It was, I think, $20,000 for the hillside. And was that it? The tree, I think I put in at $7,500. So it was at least $37,500. Sure. Oh, but you see, there had been numbers plugged in. You had 3,000 in each of the months, and then we took 3,000 out and then plugged it back in. Anyway, so it's an additional 30,000 over above what you had.
So I'd like to thank Iggy for a very thorough and complicated analysis of the work that needs to be done. He did a great job, I think, and appreciate his time. We shall now go back to 5A, which is the budget review and consideration of revisions to the budget.
Thank you. The Finance Committee met Director Federal and myself and the Administrator, and we took a look at the budget, the actual results year to date. We were using the first 7 months' actual experience, which is through January, to then evaluate the remaining 5 months of fiscal year, February through June. In your packet, you've got a spreadsheet. What I have here is some extras, because you may have had some holes that may have made it difficult to take a look at. So if you could share a copy of this with the board, I can talk about what we did and how the numbers are coming. I do want to say that to tie back into the comments from Director Federal, that yes, we did include in this budget the necessary money to cover the projected, anticipated, estimated costs of repairing, modifying parking lots and facilities for the district. On the schedule in front of you, we will see that on the left-hand side, across the top, we have July through January. We have labeled those the 2018-19 actuals. Is the actuals that flow through every month. And then on the right-hand side, it says projected February to June. Let me give you a quick summary, okay, and then I will go back and talk about individual line and how we develop it. On the right-hand side, you have two columns. The far right-hand side is the original budget That was the original budget that was approved by the board. And it has $1,702,000 of revenue, $1,701,000 worth of expense, for a net surplus of $1,663. The revised budget has an increase in revenue of a little over $30,000. We go from $1,702,000 to $1,735,000. We also have an increase in expenses. We go from $1,701,000 to $1,728,000, giving us a surplus of $7,544. And this surplus is after setting aside a reserve of $30,000. Okay? So let's talk a little bit about the revenue. First item is ambulance revenue. And in developing the revenue stream for the remaining 5 months of the fiscal year, we looked hard at the first 7 months. The average for the first 7 months was just about $48,000 a month. We then looked at the total budget originally projected. We looked at what that would mean for the remaining 5 months. And we determined that if we stayed with the original projections, that the average monthly revenue would change slightly, a little over $600 a month. So it gave us some comfort that the original projection of $579,000 for ambulance revenue looked pretty good, and in the absence of having no reason to change it, we accepted it. We also understood that when we were putting this together, that we knew that January was a very good month. We had a large number of transports. So we felt that the number here was probably conservative and good, so we stayed with it. The second item is actually second and third item, the general tax and the special assessment. Again, we looked at the revenue stream for the first 7 months and compared it to the first 7 months of the prior year. There were some distortions in the prior year because of the tax change. Effective in 2018, property tax deductions are now limited to $10,000 per return. So in December of 2017, there was a bit of a rush of people to pay not just the first half of their property tax, but to pay the entire thing so that they could get the full amount of the deduction one last time in tax year 2017. So we kind of flavored that into what we're seeing here. Our tax revenue receipts for the first 6 months of the year were about 52% of the projected amount for the first 6 months. So that gave us some comfort that what we originally projected appeared to be some pretty good numbers. So we stayed with the original projections for both the special assessment and the general tax. But what we did is we didn't spread it evenly. We took it and went back and saw how it came in last year, because it doesn't come in randomly. It comes in, among other things, a big chunk in April. So we calendarized the last 5 months based on the experience from last year. And that's how the first three items, which are the big ticket items, in terms of revenue, were developed. The Monterey contract, we looked at that, and the original budget was just $7,500. But the first 7 months of the year for the Monterey contract, we had way above more than we even thought we'd ever go over, which is good. It's a good thing. So what we did for the last 5 months is we projected three runs. We knew that we already had one in process in February when we were sitting down doing this. So we felt we were conservative by just adding two additional or three for the total of the last 5 months. Rent. Rent was a difficult one to take a look at. When you look at the first 7 months, the rent line goes up and down fairly dramatically from month to month. But it did appear to settle down in December and January. So what we did is we took the lesser of those two, the $4,254, and we ran that out for the remainder of the year for the rent. Miscellaneous had some real peaks and valleys in the first 7 months. The peaks were really insurance refunds. Insurance repaid us for some rent at one of the homes that we were using.
They did, but we didn't put it into the miscellaneous income. We got a money back. What's the name of the bike ride that we...
Best Buddies.
We paid for Best Buddies. That is the large amount in August, and that's the bike ride that goes up and down the coast.
And the large amount in December?
The large amount in December. I cannot remember. It was some... It was a... Oh, it was to pay... No, it wasn't. Did I put that money? We sold unit 15.
Oh, yeah, that's the 4,500.
Yeah, 4,500. Thank you. So, before we did anything for the last 5 months of the year, we had already made the budget. Miscellaneous is difficult to project, so as a placeholder, we really put $300 in each month. Next item is the GEMT reimbursement. We didn't have anything for the first 7 months, and we projected nothing for the last 5 months. We know that there has been a dispute between the district and the state on past filings for GEMT. There's kind of, as we know at this point, some good news and bad news. The bad news is we're going to have to pay some money back. Potentially, the good news is there's an open period of time that we haven't filed for. Okay, looking and discussing with the administrator on a rough justice basis, we believe should we ultimately have to pay anything back, we would simultaneously file for the open period, and those numbers we believe should offset each other. So as a result, we didn't project any income for this program. And interest is a very small item. We didn't project anything for the last 5 months. And when you put that all together, that's $1,735,951. Are there any questions on the revenue piece of the equation?
Any questions from the audience?
Let's go down into the expenses. The first category is really salaries and benefits. We looked hard at the first 7 months of the year to see if we could pick up a trend in any one of these particular lines. And as we did that, we noticed that there was a couple of anomalies that impacted our trend setting in the first 7 months. One, a longtime employee left, one of the EMTs, I believe, and the first 7 months are impacted with the payout of any accrued vacation or any other benefits that they have. The second has to do with the administrative line. You can see in the month of September that kind of spiked. And as we all know, that the previous administrator has left. And also in his departure, there was accrued benefits that needed to be paid out to him. What we looked at is really, again, December and January, because all the noise of people leaving, okay, was behind us by that point in time. So we were able to look at where the numbers kind of settled down, and we relied very heavily on the run rates in December and January to project out for the last 5 months. So you'll see on the administrative line, because they were low with nobody there, and now that we do have somebody in, we increased it. So we have $12,000 a month for the last 5 months of the fiscal year in that category. And then for both full-time and part-time, we use $43,000 and $9,000 in each of those categories for each of the last 5 months of the fiscal year. Uniforms kind of went up and down. Some months were very low, at $106. Some were high, up in the $1,566. We felt that that was something that we probably could control and make sure that we buy only what is needed, when it is needed. And we want to make sure that uniforms are covered, but we don't want to have any inventory of unused stuff. And so that's what we did there, projected 200. PERS, medical and dental and Medicare. Again, you need to look at the experience for the first 7 months and develop a run rate for the last five. For PERS, we use 13,000, medical and dental 17, and for the Medicare 1,500. And that appears to be in line with what we've experienced in the first 7 months. Next item is workers' comp. I talked about earlier in the meeting that we made the final lump sum payment of $19,932, which covers the remainder of the fiscal year. So you'll see we projected no cost for the last 5 months of the fiscal year for workers' comp. Trustees' comp. We voted earlier in the year to eliminate the compensation for the trustees, so you'll see that there is nothing in the budget for the last 5 months. Education and travel, that went up and down each month, and what we did is we made provisions on a quarterly basis for that. There's not a lot of money there, but there is some for the administrator of the state. Licensing and permits. Again, that happens going up and down. We projected $300 a month for the last 5 months. And training, we provided a minimal amount for the last 5 months of the year. That gave us a total of personnel-related expenses of $1,261,000 compared to $1,287,000 that was originally projected.
So basically, you projected about 33,000 additional revenue and about 20,000, well, actually $26,000 in less personnel-related expense.
Right, but understand a good portion of that reduction is the workers' comp, which is not there.
Well,
it's in the total. Any questions in that area? We'll move on to the next. The first is liability and auto insurance, and this is the second part of the lump sum payment that we made. If you look in January, there's $13,471, and that's the last payment that we needed for the year. So for the next 5 months, we'll have no expense. Audit fees, you agreed upon audit fees of $11,500. The first progress payment was made in January for $5,150, and we projected the remaining to be paid in two pieces, one in March for $5,000 and the other in May for $1,350. The election, unfortunately we had the election last year and we have to pay for it. The projected cost of that was $16,000, and as you can see, that's projected to be paid in the month of April. I haven't yet filled this one, have they?
They have not.
Legal. take a look at the first 7 months, you can see it went up and down, and there were big numbers kind of each and every month. Now, this is a combination of paying for the sins of the past. There was a lot of carryover from the previous fiscal year where the legal expenses were very high, and those were worked off during the first 7 months. Okay? That with the last payment in January, we believe that we had all the past billings behind us.
Correct.
Other than just current activity. And this is clearly an expense line that we can control. Okay? Now,
it was also clearly under budgeted.
Clearly under budgeted. But you can see we do expect to have some legal bills in the last 5 months. And we put $2,000 in each and every one of those 5 months. But if we do our job and are prudent, okay, there's no need for us to spend much of that money. But you need to know that we made a provision should something happen. Mm-hmm. It's there. Okay. Utilities, we basically used a run rate. That was up and down, and we believe that $500 a month is a reasonable placeholder for the last 5 months.
You mean $1,500?
$1,500, sorry. Yes, I was thinking of office supplies.
Yeah.
Office supplies, again, $500. That was based on the activity for the first 7 months. Put a reasonable amount in there. Again, office supplies is something you can control. Contract services. This is where we have our outside accountant and profit lines and any other outside consultant we would use. We felt, based on what we had seen in the first 7 months, that an amount of $3,000 a month seemed reasonable. And last, the facilities and repair and maintenance. We had some dollars in there. I think we had about $7,000 remaining in it. And working with the facilities committee, this is where we made provision for the estimated additional $30,000 that Director Federoff talked about during his report for the facilities committee.
So we're going to end up spending more than was originally budgeted, but hopefully the amount that we're projecting is going to be in the ballpark of the right number. We don't know until we get the bids, of course.
Sure. Fleet fuel and oil. There are some expenditures each and every month that are processed through the credit card when the crews are out and they need to gas up and they're not in Cambria. But the majority of the fuel expense comes from CCSD because we use their fuel and they bill us. And there's two large payments in the last 5 months, one projected to be in March and another projected in June. And based on the large payments during the first 5 months, we felt $6,000 was reasonable. Medical equipment and supplies, this line went up.
What about fleet maintenance?
Fleet maintenance, I'm sorry. Fleet maintenance, again, we relied heavily on the first 7 months and projected $1,000 in February, $500 in March, and then up and down again for the remaining 3 months.
Now, during the finance committee meeting, we asked that the administrator make contact with Project Heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
As had been mentioned previously, I don't remember what meeting it was mentioned at, but she agreed that she would approach Don Melendi, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Who is the remaining trustee of Project Heartbeat, to see if he would be willing to fully fund the acquisition of that ambulance, which required some significant maintenance work to be done on it, once we received it here, something on the order of $6,000. So she agreed to do that, and hopefully she'll be successful. So anyway, if you look back in November, there was quite a heavy charge, and I think in September there was as well. And so I think those can be answered with what it costs to refurbish the new used ambulance. And I think we had one another bill for about $600 in February. So, anyway.
Moving on to medical supplies, this line went up and down. This is where in November we purchased the strike attorney, so the expense went up over $10,619. Of that, $8,000 plus is the strike attorney. In January, we received the repayment of that from Project Heartbeat, so we created the negative amount of $6,428. So as we looked at the first 7 months and projected, we felt $2,000 a month for equipment and supplies was a reasonable amount to be projected. And the last item in that category is the vehicle payments. This is the financing of one of the ambulances. We pay quarterly $7,983. And we have one payment left for the year.
And we have, what, 2 years to go? Is that right?
I think so. It's somewhere between 2 and 3. Would you let me give you the exact number?
No.
Okay. The last category is contingency reserve. The month of April is a great, it's like the month of December in terms of cash receipts. And you have to pay
for
property taxes by April 10th, and the state gets that money to us. And so, the county, so you can see that the revenue from both the general tax and the special assessment is very large in the month.
Federal property.
We looked for building a reserve. We determined that we could afford a $30,000 reserve in this budget, and we put it in the month of April. The remaining items, project outreach.
Unit replacement.
Unit replacement. We didn't put anything in the last 6 months there. And the two payments in August and September in the first part of the year was the acquisition cost of the new used ambulance. We had received the revenue, the payment from Project Heartbeat for the ambulance last June. So it was a good news in the previous fiscal year. But the cost, the actual payment for the ambulance was in this fiscal year in August and September. So that's a burden.
And it had not been budgeted.
No.
So
we covered it. Project outreach, we put $500 in for the last 5 months. We weren't quite sure what the right number would be, but we wanted to make sure that there was some dollars in there should they want to spend something. And then the miscellaneous, we put a minor amount of $100 each month for the last 6 months. And when you add it all up, we have revenue of $1,735,000, expenses of $1,728,000, or a surplus of $7,544. Now, what impact does that have on our cash? Do we have enough cash to get us through to the end of the year? And so we tried to answer that question. When you look at the very last line on the sheet, where it says cash balance, I had the opportunity to look at the bank reconciliations for the month of December. And one of the things that I was able to identify was each month when we get a statement of the cash balances in the board package, it totals down to a number, in this case, for December is $386,000. But looking at the bank reconciliations, one would make a mistake to say, gee, I can write a check for $386,000. What's missing here is the provision for the uncleared checks. Because at any time you sent out and paid an invoice, the month end comes and it hasn't yet been deducted from the bank statement. So I went back in December, I identified an amount that estimated to be the outstanding checks. So instead of using $386,000, I used $365,957, which is on the last line, as a projected amount of uncommitted cash, where the balance that's in the report, the bail report package, doesn't include the outstanding checks. This amount is net of those. So then I ran it for the next 6 months to see where we were in terms of cash, and you can see that our balance went from $365,000 in December on the bottom to a balance of $301,000. At the end of June, projected, assuming all these costs come in at the projected amount, the time, and so on and so forth, giving us a surplus from a budget standpoint of $7,544. The first 6 months, we actually had a surplus of $71,000. But with the actual in January, plus our projected for 5 months, we're going to have a deficit for the last 6 months of $64,000, giving us a surplus of $7,544. So, you have any questions? Yes.
Doctor, what is your diagnosis?
The diagnosis is very positive. This budget, with an expenses of $1,728,000, includes the full cost of the used ambulance, the acquisition of the new ambulance. Okay? And that doesn't happen every day. So that's a benefit for us. Okay? I think the decision in retrospect to take both the workers' comp and the liability insurance, and even though there was an interest factor to it, to spread that out over the first, basically, 7 months of the year was probably the decision. I think we need to, at that right time, when those policies renew, take a look at that and see what the impact is with and without doing that. We may want to consider doing that again. But understand that for the last 6 years in a row, there was always a negative number on the bottom line. What we're doing here is we're projecting $7,544 surplus with a $30,000 reserve. So I think it's clearly looking more positive than it ever has been. What we need to do is now execute. And that's the tough part. Okay? We need to look at every dollar and see if it needs to be spent. If we're going to buy two of something, can we get away with one? Okay? We shouldn't get rolled into just because we bought it that way in the past. We should buy that way again in the future. And every dollar that we can save, every dollar that we can avoid an expense, we should grab quickly and keep. And we should never ever say we have a surplus, therefore we can spend.
Are you prepared to talk about getting through the next drought?
At this point, no. I need to look at, you know, the real drought, as everybody knows, is really June through November, December. And I need to take this and kind of run it out and see what the impact is during that period of time.
Any other question?
I'd like a motion to accept this revised budget for the remaining of the year.
I make such a motion.
I second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? 5-0.
Thank you.
You did a terrific job, and I think we all left with a greater understanding and a little bit of a smile. Under 5B, we have audit.
Excuse me, one second. Who seconded? Did Laurie?
I did. Laurie.
Under 5B, we have audit process update, and I don't know if that is Bill and Heidi and Maureen, or Bill, or if we have Bill down for it.
I would be happy to take this one. The field work and the audit is done, and we have received the draft audit report from Clifton Ross outside of the leaders. I am currently in the process of reviewing the draft and have a number of updates and changes that need to be made to the draft report. Okay. The report, though, contains some good news and some bad news. The good news is it's a clean opinion. It's not a going concern opinion. There is, similar to last year, a cautionary footnote that talks about the ability to execute a plan to save money that we just talked about, that in the absence of executing this, in the future, we could be getting a going concern. So it's kind of a cautionary footnote, something that we should remember and work with. That's the good news. The bad news in the audit report, I'm going to get very technical here. The ruling accounting body for government entities is the GASB, the Government Accounting Standards Board. And if you ever want to know some really dull, non-interesting people, those are the people, the accountants, that sit on those boards. But they're very smart and very intelligent. And they issue statements that direct you to do an accounting a certain way so that there's uniformity within the industry. There are public accounting companies that have to follow their own set of rules. There's the Government Accounting Standards Board that sets the rules for government entities in which you are. Over the last 10 years, both the public companies and the governmental accounting boards have been wrestling with how to disclose in the financials the impact of pensions. I think everybody has read ongoing articles in the state of California, and every state has it, where there's this large unfunded pension liability that's looming. Well, 10 years ago, none of that was on anybody's balance sheet. If your pension expense was $30,000 a year, that's what was in your financials, $30,000. But you knew that you were accruing this big liability for when people retire. Because when someone retires, and whatever the pension benefit is, however it's calculated, basically, substantially all of that money has to be somewhere to now start paying for that pension. There were two shoes that dropped. The first shoe was truly just the pension costs, and that dropped a number of years ago, which basically said you need to go out with an actuarial study, reach out for all your employees, determine what that number is, and book it. And a number of years ago, we did that for the pension. And it was about $1.5 million. When you look at the certified financial statements, there's large deficits. was driven by this. For the first time, recognizing what the pension liability for the employees was. Well, the second shoe dropped, and that's for all the other post-employment retirement benefits that one gets when they retire. Basically, it's the medical and dental components of your retirement. A number of years ago, the Governor County Standard Board came out with Statement Number 75, titled Accounting and Financial Reporting of Post-Employment Benefits Other than Pensions. If you're not an accountant, this is not an exciting document to read. There's no pictures in it. And they're never going to make a movie of these.
No plot, huh?
No plot. But for the first time, June 30th, 2018, the second shoe, we had to add another $1.5 million on the balance sheet. So the certified statements, year to date through June 30th, 2018, have a net deficit of $4,116,000. Again, substantially all of that is either pension or post-retirement benefits other than pension, which basically would help. It won't get us any time.
So what are we supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
One, understand it. And understand that this is truly the cost of providing a retirement plan, including health benefits, for the employees. Again, when I said 10 years ago, you would see $30,000 running through the financials. It's clearly a misnomer. And that's why the accounting profession and all the government regulatory agencies said, put it on the books. We know it's going to be a deficit. Put it on the books. If you look at the same thing, the same deficit, the magnitude changes depending on how small, how big or small the public entity is. But all the public entities that you look now have these large deficits, be it CCSD, be it any other special district in the state of California, any other healthcare district. Booking correctly is going to show the same amount. Theoretically, answer your question, Iggy. Theoretically, if the health district was to go out of business tomorrow, PERS would come and say, fine, you go out of business, but you owe us $4 million. Because these folks still are going to get a pension when they turn whatever the age is, 60 or 55 or 65.
But in the meantime, as I think Heidi has pointed out to us in the past, or has pointed out to the board in the past, CalPERS issues us a bill, let's say, or multiple bills, and we pay them.
Correct. Correct.
And then that is the sum total of our responsibility, other than to keep in mind that we have this.
The annual cost of the pension plan, which PERS bills, Heidi gets and Heidi pays, and the district has paid it each and every year. So the district is not out of compliance. The district pays the annual tab when it's due. Theoretically, over 30 years, I'm just picking an average age of the employees, between where they are now and retirement, theoretically, if all the actuarial assumptions are correct, at that point in time, the money will be there.
How will it be there? Because we've been paying what CalPERS has told us to pay.
Right.
Okay. So there's nothing else for us to do at this point except to know that there is this unfunded liability.
Correct. Now, some municipalities are dealing with this separately. Okay. if you go online and try to find, put in unfunded pension liability, I mean, Google will give you 100 years of reading material. Some cities like San Diego, okay, much bigger, the numbers here are astronomical, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even a billion. Besides their payment each month to PERS, as per bill, billsman, they are paying an additional $250 million on top of that to keep this bill. We unfortunately don't have the luxury to do that.
Would you recommend that we consider that for some future point in time and going to the ratepayers and say, here's how much you guys owe to make sure that our employees have a
clearly
pension?
Clearly, we need to start thinking about this now. Yeah. It's not going to be resolved in a year or two or 5 years. But this liability is not going away. It's what it is.
Could I make some comments too about if you prefer? I don't, that's perfectly fine. It's up to you. So I think it's important for people who don't understand PERS to understand something, A, about the GASB report and the way it's reported. So the GASB report that we are doing for this year is not based on 17 or 18 numbers. It's always based, I believe this was based on 2016.
Sure.
So the sad fact is that we have had three 70-year people who served this district. All of them have passed away. The last one passed away in 2016. So the actuarial amount for that person's lifetime benefits is still sitting in that report and won't be cleared until the next report is done. In the last 4 years, maybe 3 years, Jerry might be able to help me with this, we have lost 6 employees.
Seven
employees, thank you. Of those employees, many of them are our Tier 1. So our district has several tiers. It has Tier 1, that's 3% at 50, and that's a safety tier. That's the same tier that they have at CCSD Fire. We also have a second tier that we ourselves put in prior to PEPRA, which came about because of Governor Brown's decision in 2013. Our second tier is 3% at 55. The third tier is PEPRA. Anyone who has never been in PERS, who comes into any PERS system now, in safety, becomes a higher tier, is 2.7 at 57. So at this point, we have two people on our retiree list. One of them is a regular retiree. One is an industrial retirement. That person is not 50. And as they did not work their full retirement years, that will be a smaller amount for that person. And right now we have three people left in our employee who are full-time employees who are 3% at 50. Those people are considered classic employees. They receive the lifetime health benefit. Anyone else who works for us falls under the resolution that we passed, which states that those people's retirement health insurance begins at 10 years and they get 50%. It's, I believe, it's section 27863 in the PERS law book. We have several at the office if you need to see one. So you would have to retire that week. So I'm going to use, if you don't mind, Jeremy. Jeremy would have to retire at his retirement age, which for Jeremy is 55. He would have to have at least 10 years with our district, not an employee anywhere else. He could work 10 years at CCSD, but have at least 10 years with our district to receive 50% of only his health retirement paid. So all of those things are going to have to be reconfigured by whoever does the GASB report. We don't, you're talking about, Director Bedrock, do we fund or pre-fund any of our other post-employment benefits? We do not. What we do now is we get bills for every tier for the unfunded free liability. 3 years ago, the tier one was over $9,000. This year, it's at $5,000. It's going to go up a small percentage next year. Even the new Pepper Miscellaneous and Pepper Safety has a very small amount. They're beginning to pre-fund those immediately right now. So at this point, there are only four employees at the district, if they choose to stay, who would receive a lifetime health benefit. I couldn't tell you that. I don't have a crystal ball, but everyone else is either tier two and hired after the resolution where we moved all employees to the PERS scale, or several of our new employees, our excellent, wonderful employees, are PEPRA, and that's 2.7 at 57. Miscellaneous also has a new category. I believe that is 2% at 62, but at this point we don't have anybody in that tier. So that's just a
if I understand your point, our unfunded liability is somewhat overstated because of deaths that have occurred that haven't been taken into account and such.
The GASB, you know, there's several GASBs. There's 74, which I believe has turned into 45. Bill may remember these numbers, and there's GASB 54, and they used to be done, I believe, every 3 years. Now they have changed that for every 2 years because I believe this is part of the issue that they were running into, is that they were bringing numbers to agencies that, by no one's fault, did not accurately describe because of, through attrition, people either retiring before retirement age or passing away. So I think it is a bit over. I'm not an accountant, and I certainly don't do any actuarial equations, but I think it is, we are still holding one person in that amount who will, the next time the GASB is done, the amount will go down, and also because of the people that we lost in our first year over the last 3-4 years.
I'm going to chip in here too. It gets so difficult with all the things that Heidi said, and then on the flip side, it depends upon the market. You know, the real big issue with all of these funds has been that, and depending on who you believe, that return on investment was overstated.
Correct.
And now they're trying to do an adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many different factors, and I mean, everything he says is probably true, and hope that our liability will go down. But again, it also depends on our return on investment that PERS had planned, because if the stock market doesn't do as well as they had planned, they're going to pass on to all of its membership a bigger bill of liability. And so it's almost so impossible to guesstimate that, and there certainly hasn't even been, I will admit, I don't know if anyone else in this room is, I'm a public retiree.
Oh.
You too. So, I watch this, and I get actually updates every
month. Oh, well, sorry, I'm not in PERS. I'm not that kind of public retiree.
No, you're a federal retiree. I'm both. I'm a public and federal. And I pay attention to it just out of interest. And I actually subscribe to a service that I get articles every month. You know, pretty much depends on which way you want to look at that faceted ball. It's, you know, there's a lot of court cases out there. It's going to be very interesting.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is based on Bill saying that there's good news and bad news, after listening to everything, I think it's neutral news. Not so much bad news, simply that optically it looks like bad news, but we're doing everything that we're supposed to do as a district. So there's nothing that we need to do
more
different
than most districts are doing.
So
And clearly it's an actuarial calculation. And there's a lot of components to it. One of the big components is return on investment. For years and years and years, the state used 8%. Jerry Brown, maybe 4 years ago, came to the conclusion that nobody was getting 8% return on the retired investment portfolio. He sat down with the actuaries and they said, you're right, it should be 7. Okay? It would be more reasonable. And the governor said, well, given the impact of going from 8 to 7%, what does that mean to individual health districts, cities, whatever? Okay? The number was astronomical. And so Brown finally said, we can't implement this all in 1 year. We're going to stay for 1 year at 8%. The next year we're going to go to 7.85. Then we're going to go to 7.7. You know, and over like a 5 year period, they're going to ease down to that 7% to give the government entities that are participating in the program some time to react to it. Okay.
Well, excellent discussion. Any questions or comments from the public or staff? We now move on to 5D. This is an effort to increase the transparency of the health district vis-a-vis people who contribute money to help us get along financially. We are very grateful to Project Heartbeat. Been with us for a number of years, a rich tradition. But unfortunately, when you go to our website, it can be confusing to the public to think that we, the board, can make decisions over how the money in Project Heartbeat is spent. Because, in fact, it is a separate organization, and if money is given to Project Heartbeat, it is decided by the team that manages Project Heartbeat. I am also aware that other organizations have given money to us in recent years. I'm thinking of the Community Foundation and in some ways the Lions or the Rotary may in the future wish to give money to us. So I am suggesting that we develop a policy that basically says that no organization that we is not under the health district's board of directors control will be able to post fundraising information or appeals on our website. So that is what I am proposing for discussion.
Are you also proposing that we establish either a foundation or set up a 501c3 as Cloverdale has done to attract funding for capital needs and that sort of thing?
About a year and a half ago, we asked Ray Beering, our attorney at the time, how we would set up a 501c3. And if my memory serves me correctly, he said that entities such as ours would be more appropriate to create a foundation. That's a different process, and it's something we can do. I think that's something we should consider perhaps separately, perhaps next month when we have more information. There is a cost picking up the phone and calling legal and getting that initiated. So I would like to be able to provide an estimate of what doing that process, what going down that road would cost. But this seemed to me to be the first step. And after that point, I think we can think about how we can augment our funding sources from people who wish to give without competing with other community resources, but making sure that we have a way to help get donations when people wish to give them. So I would.
So in other words, what you're saying is, anything we as a board don't control needs to be removed. So Project Heartbeat is the only one that's on the website currently. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we would remove that from the website to not say anything about Project Heartbeat. It's just we don't control it. It shouldn't be on our website.
Exactly.
But number two, I think it's very important, and I think it's in Dr. Miller's and Dr. Hernandez's charter to go find ways to attract grant money, to attract donations, and so on and so forth. So,
good point.
If I were to make a motion, I would move yes that current references to Project Heartbeat be in a timely fashion removed from our website, but that the, which committee is it? The outreach?
It's healthcare advocacy and outreach.
Yeah, so the healthcare advocacy and outreach committee present to the board at its next meeting, so in March, alternatives to provide for fundraising for our district.
So
my motion.
So my concern about establishing a foundation is that we then cut our nose off to spite our face with granting funding agencies.
I don't know.
So I need
that's
to figure
something for you guys to study, I think.
Right.
And I don't think it is in any way should be seen as us turning away from people who funded us in the past, people who we appreciate and who we want to continue to have a good relationship with, that we want to continue to be able to request support from them as well. It's just that we want the people in the public to understand what we are and what we aren't. But it's not meant to. I mean, we only have one organization on the website now, so it's not meant to disparage or
discourage
any aspect of our terrific long-term relationship with Project Heartbeat. That's the delicate thing in doing something like this. But it is a clarity or transparency to the public to understand that even that we. You know, if they have a wish for what they want the money to go to, that's between them and whatever donor they give money to. And the fact that it's on our website, they would not necessarily fully understand that we can't control it. We can advise, and we have, and we benefited from those requests, but we cannot tell the public that would necessarily go in whatever direction they wanted. So that's it. That's pretty much it. So.
Well, I have a motion to, one, remove Project Heartbeat's reference and link from our website, and the second part is for the Healthcare Advocacy and Outreach Committee to study foundation, 501c3, grant, all that, and report back as soon as practical, if it's possible to do that for our March meeting, so be it.
So maybe if you would consider a revision to the motion simply to say as soon as practical?
Yes, as soon as practical.
I would second that.
Which doesn't mean 5 or 6 months either.
Iggy is a tough taskmaster. Yes. Any discussion?
Anybody second the motion?
I did.
Oh, you did. Sorry.
Marie.
I was just wondering if perhaps that the motion could be in two parts, or the motion could be in two parts, because the first part is going to be a long-term policy statement, so to speak, of how we manage our website. So perhaps if it could either be separated or be two parts, so that we have a clean policy, as you will, for
our goals going forward.
Okay.
So I will revoke my second. if you wish to change the motion.
And so then the motion would only include the removal of Project Heartbeat and to direct the policy being that no fundraising be done on our website or sponsored by our website that's not controlled by the Board of Directors.
Second.
Okay.
Any discussion on that motion now revised? Any comment from the public or staff? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 5-0. Thank you very much. We move on to declaration.
Well,
you want to do another one?
No. Well, yeah, so I want to make a second motion that requests the Healthcare Advocacy and Outreach Committee to study fundraising, outside fundraising, not related to our revenues that we get every year from the county and from ambulance runs, to help fund future capital needs and the like. So moved.
Second.
All right.
Any discussion? Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Declaration of future agenda items?
I think we should keep the audit update on there. And I think next month I'd like to see an update on where we are with the GEMT filings.
We have the bike rack issue also.
I'm sorry?
Bike rack.
The bike rack. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That doesn't, of course, you have all month to add agenda mm-hmm. items as well. It's not very good.
Do you need to respond to the request for an sponsorship?
I think that is being handled by committee.
Yeah, we'll bring that back as part of our report next month.
I don't know if this is a future agenda item, but I would like the May meeting time to be changed from starting at 1 p.m. to starting at 12 p.m.
We'll put it on the agenda and see what people think. If you know.
I will check to see if the room is available for later that day.
So we don't need to put that on a future agenda item?
We should.
Because I think we accept that at some point the calendar for the meetings for the year, so we'll make changes to make them timely and publish them.
Okay.
If I understand it correctly, changing it ahead of time rather than within the month allows it to not be a special meeting. It allows us to give due process.
So, just for my clarification, you want March's meeting?
May.
Okay, sorry, I missed.
To just start an hour earlier.
Just May.
Just up.
Just May.
Right?
Yes, just May.
Okay.
If I need to explain why, I can't.
You don't have to. We don't care. Well, there being no further business, we are duly adjourned. Thank you very much.
Maybe a closed session.
We are adjourning to closed session.
Okay. You were so
close.
Did she snore?
No, but she can't.